Welcome to the Love Yourself Naked podcast. I'm your host, Chelsea Glubish, and I've been working with women for over 2 years to help them ditch the diet mentality, find food freedom, and gain a body confidence that they never knew was possible. There is so much information out there about how to eat, how to exercise, and how to live a healthy lifestyle. My goal on the show is to help answer all your questions and provide you the tools you need to live in peace with food and love your body. So if you are ready to discover what it's like to live a life without obsession, you are in the right place. Now let's get to the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. Today, we have a very exciting guest episode, as I say for all guest episodes, but particularly exciting because I am joined today by the lovely Miss Bree Campos. And she's somebody that I have been following in the online space for a very long time. She's been so inspiring to me and so helpful on my journey. And I know that she is just going to shine a light for all of you today as well with our conversation about body image and body grief and all things body. So Bree, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. And thank you for that very, very nice and welcome, warming welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. I genuinely am so stoked to have you here.
I'm so excited. Let's get into it.
Okay. Well, why don't you just start with like a bit more of an introduction, you know, about who you are, where you're from, what you're all about.
Absolutely. So if you don't know me, my name is Brianna. I live in New Jersey. Most of my friends call me Brie. I am a trained mental health counselor. And it was around the time of the pandemic, I started transitioning into body image coaching because my favorite sessions are the ones where I get to talk about body image with clients. And it just lights me up in a way. And I always say that I was my first client. And because I figured out how to create healing in my own relationship with body image, it's something that I'm so passionate about teaching other people.
I love that. So you practice exclusively online now, right?
That is correct. Yeah.
And what has been the most beautiful part about that for you? I mean, I know I have my own thoughts about practicing in a clinic versus privately online, and I'm sure that you do as well. But what have been the best parts of that for you?
You know, I tell people all the time, like, the grass is always greener. I went from a very high stress, low paying community mental health job before the pandemic, and then went exclusively online. And I was like, wow, I really love not having to commute and drive. But what I love so much about my job is getting to meet what I call my like soulmate dreamy clients. They are the people who are ready to do the work. And they're like, I want to feel relief and I'm ready to hate my body less. And so I get to work with people who are in that part of their healing journey where they're like, I don't want to keep doing what I'm doing, but I'm ready for something different. And it's so exciting to me. So I love it. I love it so much.
That's amazing. Can you share a little bit about like what it was like working with yourself? You said you were your first client. So what does that mean? What's your story?
Oh my goodness. So if you don't know this already, if you are a therapist, you will understand therapists make the worst clients because I actually feel this way about dietitians too, right? Like we are our own worst critic and we know how to help other people, but it doesn't apply to us. There's like these separate rules. And so I blame the fact that I had gotten an internship at an eating disorder recovery center and was forced to deal with my own body image because I would have to run a body image group. And I'm like, I am not qualified to run a body image group. And I remember walking down to my supervisor and I was like, yeah, so they want to talk about body image. And so then I would get a trope that we are familiar with, like, oh, well, tell them body image is the last step to come. So I'd go back into group and I'd be like, all right, well, body image is the last step to come. And they'd be like, well, if you want us to go eat lunch, you're going to have to do better than that. And I'm like, well, that sucks. And so there was all of this material that when I would read it, I'm like, this sucks. This is stupid. I wouldn't even acknowledge, like, I this wouldn't impact me. Like, affirmations. Okay, so you don't like your body. Let's just say the opposite. Let's just say that we love our body and say it three times. It did nothing for me.
Yeah.
And so it was through my own lived experience as a person who's experienced grief and as a person who existed in a larger body that I found the piece that was missing, right? To go from that body hatred into something that resembles neutrality. I needed to learn how to grieve my body. I needed to learn how to sit in the suck of that discomfort. If you have this idea of like, this is the relationship I have with my body, and they're like a bridge to the other side, this is the desired relationship I want with my body. The thing that was keeping me from the desired relationship with my body was the part that I was really sad of all of the things that I believed I was missing out by existing in the body that I did. And nobody was willing to sit in that suck with me. So quickly we wanted to move to, but what are you grateful for? What are you, what, like, you know, what is your body doing for you? And I call this silver lining sympathy. And it's taking pain and painting with a brushstroke the silver lining thing that we can look for. And it doesn't bring the relief that you think it does. If anything, it absolves the person providing that ease of the discomfort. We as human beings don't like discomfort. We don't like to see people that we care and we love being uncomfortable. And at the same time, if you think about going to a wake or a funeral, saying to somebody, well, they're in a better place now, or, you know, at least they're not suffering anymore, that does not absolve the discomfort and the pain that that person is experiencing. Mm-hmm. And I have found in my own experience, the most powerful thing that anyone can say in the midst of grief is, this sucks, and I am here with you. Mm-hmm. And so I had to figure out how to sit in the suck of my body grief. I have a working definition for body grief as the perceived loss that causes a stress, that, I'm sorry, that causes distress when your body changes. The perceived loss that causes distress when one's bodies change. Mm. It's not just the perceived loss, but it's the fact that it causes you distress. That's the grief. And so it's such an expansive definition, because body grief can come up during puberty, during menopause, right? I have a lot of clients who are perimenopausal and experiencing grief during pregnancy. There's body grief in, you know, gender care and transitioning. There's body grief in weight gain. There's body grief in weight loss. There is body grief no matter what happens when your body changes, but it is the loss that causes distress. That is the key.
Okay, I think that's such an important definition, and also an important like precedence for this entire episode and this entire conversation, because body grief, I think when you talk about the idea of it being a loss, a lot of people don't understand that loss equates to change. It doesn't just mean, you know, that you lose weight or you lose ability or you lose something in particular. It means that you have lost a previous form of self, right?
That is a beautiful way to describe it, is that there is a loss and that loss is causing you distress.
Right. Yeah. So where does the experience of, you know, wanting to find body neutrality, but also still being fixated on that needing to look a certain way or fit a certain image come into play? Because there is no denying that in the world we live in, you get treated differently if you are in a thin body versus a larger body. And so how do we reconcile that?
Yeah, I think that this is where, you know, we talk about, you know, body positivity as a social justice movement, that this is not just about loving the skin you're in. And as somebody who, I do want you to love the skin that you're in, but not nearly as much as I want you to care why you care about loving the skin that you're in. When, you know, we deep dive in my provider's course into the intersectionalities of body image and power and, you know, and privilege, that it is easier to exist in a body with privilege. And the more privilege you have, the more power you have. And so you really have to acknowledge your own internalized anti-fat bias or fat phobia, but you also have to be willing to acknowledge the world's fat phobia as well. You know, just a quick little tangent. I'm on a recent kick of reading and trying to find books with fat main characters. And I've read about 10 books since the start of the new year with Fat main characters. And of those 10, only two of them are even books that I think are worth the read. Mm-hmm. That like, I'm 5-star. I don't get 5 stars easily. And what that tells me is that there is a lack of storytelling about fat protagonists. We see this in media. We see this in everyday life. Our bodies, we are used to seeing fat bodies as the before and not the after. Like that you can be the leading lady or the leading person of your story in the body that you have now. And I think we're so quick to want to move into neutrality, but I'll say this to my clients. You can't be neutral about something that you hate. You cannot have neutrality if there is emotion and feeling that is negative. And it's not enough to just say the opposite. We have to understand, why does this negative feeling or bias exist? Where did it come from? And then we have to learn how to shift it. And so I had to start with my own internalized anti-fat bias. And then reckoning that, you know, the world may never accept me, but I accept me. Is that enough? Like, we can sit in the grief that, yeah, I probably won't get the part if I were an actress, and I might lose out on a job because of someone's anti-fat bias. I might miss out on dates because of people's anti-fat bias. And I do, those things aren't harder because I am like, and I deserve this. And this is bad. It's, yeah, this is wrong. And I know what I'm worthy and deserving of.
I love that. I think that's going to be very comforting for a lot of people. One thing that's come up quite a bit recently with a handful of my clients is the difficulty of traveling and, you know, being in an airplane seat and the looks that people give you and the fear of eating on an airplane. Or one of my clients recently was at an airport, and in the food court, all of their tables have the chairs attached to them. And she actually ended up writing a formal complaint to the airport because they're all about accessibility. And yet she couldn't sit down to eat a meal because there's not enough room between the table and the chair.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, there's grief in that. Like, it is enraging that you don't fit into the mold that society has created. And this is where I would encourage my clients is to explore what else is true. An airplane is not designed for our comfort. The airplane is designed to fit as many people as possible into the plane. Capitalism is going to win out over accessibility. Yeah. And when you can remember who the real enemy is, when you can remember that body size is not the enemy, but that the systems at play, the people who hold power, capitalism, all of these things that profit from us believing something is wrong with us is the problem, not our bodies. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think in that way we can really identify fat bias as a system of oppression.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And, you know, like I just wanna, I always put a clarifier in, like, you know, we live in a capitalistic society, right? So, you know, you and I both have businesses. We are a part of, you know, the system, but there's no ethical consumption under capitalism. And so it really forces us, can we acknowledge our privilege and power, and are we willing to let some of it go in the hope that we will be able to secure more safety and equity for people around us? I didn't realize how much privilege and power I held until I lost it. I didn't realize, oh, there's going to be a point where I'm not going to even be able to put the tray table down on the airplane. I'm going to be able to walk into a restaurant and not be sure that there's going to be a chair that holds me. Mm-hmm. And I was so focused on not focusing on my body changing that I didn't even give myself time to prepare what happens when we get there.
Right. Would you argue that everyone at every point in their life is in a stage of body grief?
Yes.
What are the stages? Can you talk about those?
Yeah. So I model my stages right after Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who created the stages of death and dying originally. And then she changed it to grief and loss, because what she found is that, you know, grief and loss is not just about death and dying. That's bereavement. But that grief and loss has to do with the distress of loss or change. And so the stages of grief are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Most of the people that I know who are preparing for a journey with intuitive eating are stuck in the bargaining phase. The bargaining phase is, maybe I can still fix this. Maybe it's not as bad as I think it is. When you come to me, you are in the depression of your body grief. It is, I can't believe this is my body. And acceptance is not, woohoo, I love my body, which is also sort of that toxic positivity that we hear in the body positive movement. And I'll put another clarifier. The body positivity movement started as a social justice movement. It was created by queer, fat, Black women as a way to address the inequity that was happening to people who exist in those bodies, and somehow has shifted into like, ooh, I love the skin that I'm in. That's not what it started as. Acceptance is not, I love this. Acceptance is, this is my body. This is it. And I am not fighting it any longer. And for me, acceptance is the subtle surrender of acknowledging what is in my control and what is not.
I'm going to interrupt this episode for just a minute to invite you to start your food freedom journey, to truly discover what it's like to live in peace with food and accept your body. Maybe you've thought about what it would be like to live without food rules, but fear that you won't be able to control yourself around pizza, cookies, ice cream. Maybe you have a desire to eat without food guilt, but fear weight gain. That is why I created my 12-week group coaching program, a step-by-step roadmap to help you ditch the diet mentality and embrace food freedom. Inside the program, you have access to all the tools you need to help you understand your metabolism, eat healthy, satisfying meals, and never feel the need to go on another diet again. You also have access to one-on-one coaching with me to help design a custom game plan specifically for you. So if you're ready, I'd love for you to join me in the Food Freedom Collective. You can grab your spot by clicking the link in the show notes or DMing me the word freedom on Instagram. Whether you've tried intuitive eating in the past or you're sick of dieting and ready to discover what it's like to have a healthy relationship with food that isn't stressful, this program will transform your life. All right, now back to the episode.
And the other thing with the stages of grief is that they're not linear. Like, you don't go through the stages. I have a lot of people that come into my world who start in the bargaining phase, and then they move into the depression, and then they bounce back up to anger. And they're like, I'm really pissed off that this is the messaging that I learned, and this is where I'm at. And then they accept their body, and then they're like, hold on a second. I accepted that body, but now my body has changed since when I started working with you. And so I had a client ask me once, she said to me, Bree, how long do I have to do this body image shit? Ooh, I don't know if I can curse.
Yes.
Okay. And I was like, I feel you. I feel you, girl. And I said, for as long as you have a body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have a body, and that sucks. There will be times in your life where it's going to be more prevalent and present. You know, when there are big things going on in life, when you're getting married, when you're having a baby, when I moved, like, you are so much more aware of your body during certain seasons of life. As long as you have the tools to be able to manage the grief will not consume you. It'll eventually throw you back up on shore.
Mm-hmm. What's your, I'm not going to quote you, I'm going to let you say it, but I already know what it is. The dig versus the journey.
Yes. Okay. So all of the time I would hear people say, body image is a journey. And they used to piss me off because I'm like, which exit do I get off? Like, where do I get to stop doing this body image work? And what I found is that if you keep looking for the destination, you're focused on where you're going rather than what's happening along the way. And so what allowed me to have a little bit of peace in my exploration was shifting from a destination to an archaeological dig. That if we are archaeologists of our body image, that we, if we have the tools and we have the language, we have a team and we get to explore, when we hit something where we're like, I don't know how much longer I can do this, we get to stop. We get to put the tarp down and say, you know what? I need to come back up for air, and this isn't going anywhere, and there's still more that I can dig. Mm-hmm. I share very openly that, you know, it started for me with making peace with food. I had to acknowledge the fear that I had around eating because of the stories that I was telling myself of, if I like and eat these foods, then this is what's going to happen to my body. That's not the same struggle that I have today. And yet it's just a deeper layer of the dig. It started with my body, and then it moved into, you know, how I am as a provider. And then it moved into how I am as a business person. And then it moved into, holy crap, I have so many people-pleasing wounds that I just never acknowledged. And so the deeper you dig, the more that's there. Now it's coming up in my dating life and being like, wow, this is a vulnerable process and I don't like doing things I'm not good at. And just like I teach with my body image clients, it's going to be uncomfortable. Like, this part is going to be uncomfortable, but is it worth it? If this is where you are in your relationship and this is the desired relationship you want, we have to acknowledge what's keeping us there, and that's going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you piece apart, or how do you acknowledge when people talk about, when people are in that bargaining stage, in particular with, you know, weight gain, with learning how to eat intuitively, letting go of dieting, when they say things like, okay, but I can control my body, or I should be able to control my body, because if I just manage what I eat and how I move, then I should get X outcome.
For sure. For sure. So, you know, first and foremost, we have to look at the empirical research of that. And if I were to ask you, you know, or if I were to ask anybody, how many people in your life do you know who have sustained long-term weight loss and also don't have eating disorder behavior? Mm-hmm. And if you don't understand eating disorder behavior, meaning that they have a really good relationship with food and their body and movement and rest, and that they are not consumed with how many calories they're eating or how many macros they're eating or how much they're moving their body, or they're good or they're bad if they exercise, like, how, you know, what does their relationship look like with their food, their body, and their relationship to movement? So if somebody is desiring that weight loss and says, but I know there's three hurdles that I hear most often. One, but I'm uncomfortable in this body. Mm-hmm. Two, what about my health?
Yeah.
And three, what will people think of me? Mm-hmm. All of those are not wounds that can be dealt with just weight loss. Right? Like that. So this is, again, for that dig, that's a surface level. It's like when you have a bad breakup and you get a haircut. Does the haircut actually solve anything? Or does it just give you that immediate relief of like, wow, okay, something's different. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you get a lot of compliments, but it's just distracting you from the pain. And that was one of the other pieces too, is when it came to grief, I realized so many people wanted to move so quickly into, okay, you're uncomfortable in your body. What can you change? Mm-hmm. What can you do differently? And it felt like, again, just absolving themselves of the discomfort of the grief that I was feeling. And so when I thought about, well, how do I want somebody to sit with me in this grief? I realized I just wanted somebody to ask me, what's the worst part about it? What's the story that you're telling yourself? And most times when I ask that question, like, well, tell me about it. Like, what's the worst part about this? The story they come up with, they're like, I don't even believe that. Like, you know, if they're feeling pain in their body, the story I'm telling myself is that I caused this. And logically, I know that's not true. That, like, yeah, maybe if I had done more things, maybe I wouldn't be here, but I wouldn't speak to anyone else that way. So why am I here? And this is part of the problem. This is why I say body image is not about body image. Body image is not about your body. Because you will never heal a logical, I'm sorry, you will never heal an emotional wound with logical reasoning. If this is an emotional wound, there's no logic that's going to convince you, oh, this is no big deal, it's fine. No, this is what you feel. Let's figure out why this thought is here. How did we get here? And how do you want to feel? Where are you now and where do you want to be?
Yeah, I love that. Something I often ask people when they're talking about reasons that they fear weight gain or reasons that they struggle with food or with their body or whatever it may be is I just say, whose voice is that? Mm-hmm. Like, is that your voice or is that your mom's voice or is it society? Because it's actually never our own voice.
There are people who are like, it's my own voice, but where did you learn it from?
Yes. Yes.
Where did this come from? And so one of the things I'll encourage people is I want you to think about something that you have believed in your lifetime that you no longer believe, right? Like, what is a belief that you have once held? I had very different politics at one point, but the politics that I believed at the time was because that was what my environment said. This is how you should believe. And it wasn't until I said, all right, I'm going to be divergent and I'm going to explore what is right for me, what feels good to me, what is aligned with my values. And there's a risk in being rejected from a community that was once like, this is the right way to believe. I'll often recommend people to think about this too, of like, you know, I have very different politics from my family. There is a fear in being able to vocalize of, hey, I feel differently about this, but it's less personal, I think, than with body size, because oftentimes I think we are trying to convince ourselves of the worst case scenario. And that if we can prepare for the worst case scenario, it won't hurt. And what I find is that instead of trying to figure out what the right thing to say or the right thing to believe, can we figure out what feels good to you? Just like we do with intuitive eating. How do you want to feel about bodies? What is it that you want? What is the desired relationship you want? If that's body love, great. Let's figure out how to do it. If you're like, I am so sick of seeing people celebrate their jiggle and their cellulite, that doesn't have to be your journey. That doesn't have to be your story. You get to decide what the story is, and we get to figure out what's preventing us from getting there.
Yeah, love that. Can we circle back for a second to the fear of weight and health and that connection? And how do you unpack that with people? Like, if a client comes to you and says, well, you know, I need to lose weight for my health, or my doctor told me I need to lose weight, or there are, you know, I know of what's going to happen if I continue to gain weight. I know that this is what I'm going to get diabetes. I'm going to have cardiovascular disease. It's inevitable.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this is, I'll insider trick for those that are listening. I ask a lot of motivational interviewing questions. So motivational interviewing is a therapeutic style of, I want to understand what your motivation for change is. When somebody says to me, I need to lose weight for health, I need to understand first, well, what does health mean for you? My therapist had actually asked me this, and I had said something like, this was back when I was disordered, said something like, well, it just means that I'll, you know, eat when I'm hungry, stop when I'm full, and I'll exercise. And she said, well, then by that definition, you're healthy. And I said, no, I also need to lose weight. She goes, well, that's not what the definition you just gave me. So which is it? Do you need to lose weight to be healthy? Or is it the things that you just described? And I didn't realize the cognitive dissonance of, I'm saying that I want these things to define health, but really, I really just wanted to not exist in my body. I didn't want to exist in a larger body. And when we explored that of, well, okay, what does it mean if you exist in a larger body? It meant, in my mind, that I was going to experience less love in my life. Mm-hmm. And that was a wound I wasn't willing to explore yet. So if somebody comes to me and says, I need to lose weight for health, first thing I'm going to ask them is to define health. I usually get a lot of really good answers. I just want to be able to move better. I want to lower my A1C. I want to have more energy. So the second question I'll ask you is, let's say hypothetically, we can get all of those things, but your body size doesn't change. Will that be enough for you? Nine times out of 10 people tell me no. And what that tells me is that it's not really about health.
Yeah.
That health is masquerading as the reason that you want your body to change. Mm-hmm. And so we need to explore, well, why is that? This is an example of grief. I didn't want to exist in a larger body because I knew that my body was a walking resume to people of my health status, that people were going to presume my health just by looking at me. And that sucks. And we can sit in that suck. I have clients that say to me, I get less quality healthcare because of existing my body. That is another layer of grief. We can sit in that suck. And there's ways we can advocate for you. When we look at the social determinants of health, we are only in about 30% control of our health with behavior changes, which is food, exercise, sleep, 30%, which means that there is a much larger percentage that isn't in our control.
Yeah.
And I've had people say to me, well, 30% is still a lot. I'm like, well, if I was a betting person, if they said your odds are about 30%, that's not really a bet I would be willing to take.
Yeah.
And furthermore, do people, like, if the thing that they're desiring is, you know, better blood pressure, all these things, and they're like, but I know that I've experienced better health when I existed in a smaller body. Mm-hmm. Can we get curious? Was there, it was a correlation or was it causation? What else were you doing in that time that probably contributed to that? Were there other things? At the end of the day, I can't give you permission to exist in a larger body. Like, I can, but it's not going to mean shit. Like, you are going to be the one that has to give permission to exist in a larger body. And when we talk about permission, I always say to people, it's not like when we were kids and it was like, okay, can I go to so-and-so's house? And it's like, well, you can if you want to. That is not permission. That is like layered in guilt. Mm. Permission is like, abso-fucking-lutely. Like, what, like, I got you. Like, yes, that sounds great. I'm here for you. I will love you no matter what you choose. I will love you. I love you. Like, yes, yes. That is authentic and full permission. And there's a lot of us who don't have that when it comes to our bodies.
Yeah. So you talk about sitting in the suck. How do we move through the suck?
I mean, this is the part where it's not sexy, y'all.
Yeah.
We want the sexy body image, right? We want to wear the bikini. We want to go on the hot date. We want to, you know, be able to, you know, tell off the troll. That might not be your story. The first thing that I do when I sit in the suck is I acknowledge the feelings that I'm experiencing without judgment, without criticism. There's not that criticizing voice is very loud. And I usually have to be like, you need to take a seat, because right now we just need to acknowledge the feelings that are coming up without judgment. Mm-hmm. Then when we acknowledge the feelings, I encourage people to scale the distress, low, medium, high. How distressful is this? If it is a high distress, what that tells me is your body feels unsafe. And that this is not something that we're ready to explore. This is a huge mistake I see providers make. We want to go right into the what we call body image exposure. And I feel that is traumatizing for reasons we don't need it to be. So if somebody says it's a high level of distress, our goal is going to be, how do we mitigate that distress? How do we bring it, let's say it's at a 7 out of 10, how do we bring it to a 6? How do we make this moment more bearable? The more resiliency you have when you have distressing emotions, it will serve you in the long run because your bounce back will be quicker. A lot of times the worst case scenario is, I don't know how I'm going to get through this. But if you can experience negative body image, or distressful body image, as I like to call it, because it's not negative, it's just information. If we know how to bring ourselves down from a heightened experience, then our turnaround time is going to be much quicker. Now, if it's on the lower end, if it's like, okay, it's moderate, but I could explore it, then let's explore it. Let's figure out Why are these stories coming up? Where did this come from? What is it communicating to me? How is it serving me? And how is it not serving me anymore? I think about, you know, there's so many examples, but we could go back to the traveling one, right? Of if somebody is like, I want to travel, but I don't like not fitting on the airplane. Part of the suck that you have to decide is the payout worth it?
Right.
Do you want to travel more than you want to not be uncomfortable? And for me, it's worth it. Mm-hmm. I can't make that call for you. Just like dating, right? I'm on a dating, I don't even know if I would call it a journey right now, but I hate dating. It's the worst. It sucks. But I know what I want. And so am I willing to sit in a little bit of discomfort to potentially get what I want?
Right.
And I think that this is the part that I think people get stuck in, is they don't believe that that exists. That, like, the hope of positive body image does not exist in their mind because they've never experienced it. Yeah. And so this is where I encourage people, let's get the small win. Let's find something that we can create a little bit of evidence of, like, ooh, maybe this is actually working. It's not like with weight loss and body change where you can see the immediate results and people are probably praising you and you're saying, it's going to be more subtle. Yeah. And so I'll give you an example. For years, I haven't weighed myself because I found that when I stepped on the scale and I saw the number, it only served to distress me. And so I said, you know what? I don't actually need to know the number. As much as my curiosity would really like to know, it is not serving me. And so I let that go. And I was very firm in my advocacy, in my care of, I cannot see or know the number. I will not get on a scale. I will not guess a number for you. This is not what I'm doing. And I recently ended up having a small procedure where I needed to have anesthesia done. So I knew they were going to need the number. And they put it in my chart. And I saw the number and I was fine. And that was the evidence to me of, this is what happens with time, exploration. My solution for grief is building awareness plus active unlearning over time and in community. I would have never known that I could have handled that until being faced with it. And I also wasn't willing to put myself in a situation where I was going to look. When I ended up seeing it and I was like, oh, wow, I felt so neutral. I was like, okay. And that used to be a fear number for me of, I can gain weight, but I can't get to this number. It showed me the evidence that my beliefs and my thoughts can shift over time. I can unlearn stories, and that I don't have to, acceptance doesn't mean I have to like it, but it can be the absence of fear, anger, hatred.
Love that. Yeah. I think that your personal testimony is so important and so expansive for people who are in that space that you were of disbelief and thinking, well, I'm never going to get, that doesn't even exist. That's la la land. It's up in the clouds. It's right. not within reach for me. If people are in that space and they are wanting to feel better, but they still have that idea of, maybe they're still in bargaining. Maybe they're still bargaining about, well, you know, this diet worked for me once, or I haven't tried this one yet, or whatever that narrative is looking like for them. What does your approach look like with a client like that? What's kind of like your 1, 2, 3 steps?
Yeah. So Ashley Bennett, the body image therapist, actually uses this analogy. And I just thought it was the most perfect analogy to describe those who are in the bargaining phase. If you can imagine that there's two ships and they're going off in separate directions. You have the ship of, you know, radical body grief and fat positive and body acceptance, and then you have diet culture. When you are in the bargaining phase, you have one foot on both ships. And if you stay there while the ships are pulling out, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
So what I encourage people to do is jump on one ship. Even if that is like, I need to try one last diet. I need to do this. I need to prove to myself that this is the thing I need to do. I cannot be the one to convince you that it's not going to end the way that you want. We can ask some questions and we can explore. I've had clients who've come to me who did my Body Groovers group and then left and had weight loss surgery. And it sucks because I want something so much more for you than that. And that is not to shame anybody who's had surgery, anybody who's thinking about surgery. As somebody who's had weight loss surgery, I usually just encourage people to pause before making such a life-altering decision. I wish I had. And there are people who have quote unquote success who don't like that I share very openly about not wanting to have the surgery, or wishing that I had not. If you are somebody who is in the bargaining phase, first thing I'm going to ask you to do is figure out what is the desired relationship that you want to have. Like, if I had a magic wand and I could wave my hand within reason, right? What is the relationship you would want to have with your body image? That's first. Is even as fantastical and nonsensical as it might seem. Two, I want you to come up with a list of people whose relationship with their body is one that you would like to have. Part of the reason that I think we struggle with believing it exists is because we don't have people in our circles who have a good relationship with their body image. And I say this all the time. My therapist had asked me that, and I didn't have anybody. And so my niece was born that year. Ooh, so much emotion coming up for me. And that was the first moment I was like, if she ever gets asked this question, I want her to say, Ampri. That was the moment. I couldn't even heal for myself. I wanted to heal for her. I want her to never feel an ounce of the shame and the pain in her body because of her body, despite the world that we live in. And that was the moment I said, okay, I have to do something different because if I want her to have a different experience, then something has to change. So figure out who in your orbit has the desired relationship, even if it's somebody on the internet. And three, what is holding you back? Can we explore what is the thing that is holding us back? If it is the fear of health, can we achieve health without weight loss, without body change? If it is the fear of what other people think, can we explore outside of your body image where else that comes up? Where else is that wound showing up? If it is discomfort, can we provide evidence for our brain that people in all size bodies experience discomfort and pain? And I address almost all of these on my podcast. So I would definitely recommend checking out my podcast. It is a beacon of resources for body grief that if you have thought it, I have probably thought it, or somebody in my world has thought it. And we try to answer and address all of those wounds.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think that's super helpful, super supportive for people. I will make sure also to link your podcast in the show notes so people can go there and find more information and listen to more. Because just hearing you speak about all of this is so helpful. It's been truly so helpful for me as well. I don't like I've never lived in a larger body, and so that's one gap that I will likely always have with my clients and with the support that I provide, which is why it's so helpful to have people who can speak from all different walks of life and all different lived experiences. But one thing actually that has come up recently for me is I just recently, I haven't actually gotten a formal diagnosis, but I have developed some, I suppose it's a disability from a neurological condition. And so that's been an interesting thing to navigate, and that's brought up a lot of grief just going through like, how does my life look different? How do I still do the things I enjoy, even though my body is working differently now? And just you explaining all of that and drawing that out, it helps even just to be able in those moments of higher distress or being what we might call triggered by a particular event or just that increased awareness of our body to be able to pause and just break that down and really get curious about like, where is this coming from? What is coming up for me is, yeah, that's so helpful.
I'll end with this. Catherine Max is somebody who's she's done presentations on my community. She is a fat and disabled bodied person who advocates for, you know, quality care for people in fat and disabled bodies. And one of the things that she says that it shifted my entire perspective was that the human experience has no normal. Part of the grief is when we expect this is what it should look like. And when we can allow that maybe it's not how we thought it was going to look, but that it doesn't have a normal,
right,
that there is, that normal doesn't exist, and that there is just variation upon variation and differences. Can we embrace that difference and meet every single person exactly where they are, rather than trying to conform to a standard?
Power of perspective, hey?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So cool. Okay, the last question I have for you, and it's a question I ask every guest on the episode or on the show, is what does self-love mean to you? And what does that look like in real life? How do you practice self-love?
I love this question. If you had asked me 5 years ago, I probably just like rolled my eyes, like, self-love, stupid. I am an advocate for self-love. And the way I describe it, I'm a neurodivergent girly, which means I have several cups on my desk right now. So you will be able to see this visual, but others won't. I have multiple cups, containers on my desk, and they each have different, you know, contents inside of them. For me, self-love is loving the contents in the container, regardless of what the outside looks like. I can pour what's in this cup into a different size cup. The shape can change, the color can change, everything about it can change. But if the content remains the same, you know, that is self-love. And so what I would encourage people to do is, can you figure out who you are outside of your body? What brings you joy? What are your pet peeves? What are things that you dislike? Who is your personality? What motivates you? What lights you up and brings you absolute pleasure and joy? And man, we could talk about pleasure and as a whole other podcast episode, but so many of us struggle with being able to experience joy in our bodies because we're so conditioned to hating our bodies. Mm-hmm. Figure out what makes you tick. Figure out what's the content in the cup. And what was the second part of that question?
What does this look like for you in practice? Like, how do you practice self-love?
For me, self-love started with I'm going to just say it the way I say it to myself, is like not being a dick to myself. Like, I needed to not be an asshole to myself. And so when I would notice these like small little jabs at myself, I'd be like, okay, that's not kind. And we wouldn't say this to anybody else. And it felt really difficult. You know, even something as small as like, if I make a mistake and I'd be like, oh, I'm so stupid. I started to catch myself and be like, you know what? I wouldn't let anybody else speak to me this way. And I wouldn't speak to anyone else this way. So I can't allow myself to speak to myself in such a degrading way. So that's first. Second, figuring out what brought me joy, what feels good, what brings me pleasure. And three, the hardest for me, is figuring out what doesn't feel good and being able to ask for that. Of like, actually, this doesn't feel good. Actually, this is not what I want. And it started with food. Mm-hmm. And it's grown into, you know, into my dating life of like, oh no, you know what I don't like? I don't like small talk. I'm not going to do this. I'm not doing it. And I'm allowed to audaciously ask for what I want, yeah, unapologetically. It might start with food. It might be something that seems so inconsequential, mm-hmm, but self-love for me started with giving myself permission to eat my favorite foods without guilt.
Love that. I think that's such a nuanced perspective to self-love and something that, you know, most people wouldn't even think of oftentimes. I always just love hearing what people's answers are because they're all so different. And, you know, it's never the stereotypical bubble bath and massage facial, which also makes me happy because I think if someone said that, I might be like, oh no.
Maybe not.
And not to say that it can't be, or that that can't be a component of it, but like, if we're digging deep, what does that really mean?
Yeah. Do you, I don't know if you've watched Parks and Rec.
No.
Oh my gosh. So for those that are listening, they might get this. So there's this whole, like, you know, thing on the show where they have a treat yourself day. And one of the characters, Ben, goes along for this treat yourself day, and he is so uncomfortable because none of the treat yourself day activities is his treat. Like, that's not what he likes. And so he ends up buying a Batman costume, and that's his, you know, treat yourself. You need to figure out how to treat yourself. It might be bubble baths. Bubble baths are not enjoyable to me. I have low blood pressure. I don't like sitting in a tub. Like, that's just not it for me. But going to the spa, that is a way that I can experience joy and pleasure in my body. Going to a cafe, drinking coffee. My newest joy in life is going and finding a new cafe. I get a mocha and I get a chocolate croissant everywhere. And it brings me so much pleasure. And to be able to do that without the judgment and the shame of how is this going to change my body? What are other people thinking about me? How is this impacting my health?
Yeah.
It's transformative.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh gosh, Bree, you are just such a breath of fresh air. This was such an amazing conversation. Last thing, I guess, that's super important is, where can people find you? Obviously, I will link your podcast, but where can people, you know, find out more about you, what you offer, who you are?
Yeah, so I would say the best place to find me is my Instagram. I will always share how you can work with me. I do have a website. It's not as up to date as I'd like it to be, but it's bodyimagewithbree.com. And I also recommend you can email me. And my email is hello.bodyimagewithbree@gmail.com. And just ask how we can get connected and how we can work with you.
Amazing. Love that. Yeah, I'll link all of that in the show notes for anyone that wants to reach out to you or find out more about you. This was, again, such an amazing conversation, selfishly for me, and I know for all of the listeners as well. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning in. If you guys got value from the show, I would love for you to rate and share it. And if you have any questions about the conversation today, you can always find me on Instagram or Facebook @ Chelsea Glubish. Catch you on the next one.